Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by two podcast icons. It's Joe Tomlinson. Hello, Joe.
Howdy, boys. How's it going?
Not bad. And Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie.
Howdy. I like the intro of howdy. I'll go over that as well. Howdy, guys.
Oh, my good God. How are you guys both? How are you coping with the heat right now?
Yeah. Oh, this is not ginger heat, is it? This is just terrible time to be a ginger.
But
I'll
at least you're quite hairless. I've got fur everywhere. Like, I'm having a horrible time. I feel like I haven't slept in like 5 days. Too hairy for this heat. It's not good.
Oh, well, save that for later because we might have a remedy for you there, Doogie. But this week, unsurprisingly, we're going to be talking about the Champions League because we have finished the round of 16 and we are heading into the quarterfinals and some very juicy quarterfinals indeed have been set up. But we're going to start with a little look at Man City's win over Real Madrid. They've re-established themselves, I would say, as one of the sides to beat in the tournament following a 2-1 home victory, pretty comfortable home victory over Madrid, putting them through 4-2 on aggregate. Now, both of their goals in this game came from Real Madrid mistakes, specifically from Rafa Varane. Firstly, Varane dawdled on a ball at the back, allowing Gabi Jesus to rob him and set up Sterling for a simple tap-in before a weak header back to Courtois in the second half allowed Jesus to run through again and hook it home. Now, Karim Benzema scored a really nice goal and was actually dangerous throughout, but frankly, Joe, I don't think that Real Madrid were ever truly in this fixture.
No, I mean, this is one of my first times watching Madrid this season, and yeah, they're just not fit to lace City's boots, quite frankly, were they? I've watched a lot of Man City this season, and I thought that was a terrible performance by Real Madrid. Just looked totally clueless, looked like a team, to be honest with you, that aren't used to playing against the press. And I know that's something that gets thrown at Spanish teams a lot. But obviously the press that Man City implemented on them was way too much for that Real Madrid backline. Courtois couldn't pass the ball with his feet. Varane looked like Phil Jones at the back on the ball. I thought Dani Carvajal was appalling on the night. Eder Militao, what do they spend on him? 50 million euros? Just not fit, not even remotely at Sergio Ramos's level in terms of being able to step in and fill his shoes. I thought Casemiro was horrific in defensive midfield. His ball retention was embarrassing at times. There were moments where he would turn, be pressed by a player, and would just literally just pass it anywhere on the pitch. And KDB was just all over him. De Bruyne was just sensational. And Zidane looked clueless, to be honest with you. I thought his tactical substitutions were wrong. I didn't agree with the decision to take off Rodrigo when Eden Hazard had touched the ball about four times and was having an absolute stinker. I think he took him off for Asensio, didn't he? So it just was bizarre from Real Madrid. I thought they were terrible on the night. Man City were comfortable throughout the whole 90. And if that game had finished 5-1 to Man City, I wouldn't have batted an eyelid. That's the sort of romping that was. 5-6-1 would have been a fair result there.
What do you think, Dukes? Do you agree with that? Because I've got to say, like, Joe's been quite harsh, but I find it extremely hard to disagree with anything that he said, really. It was a pretty bad... I'm looking at some of these stats here, and they are damning.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it was pretty damning. The only thing I probably wouldn't totally agree with, I thought Casemiro had his odd moments. I mean, there was that tackle on Raheem Sterling when he was sort of jinxing through in the first half in the box, which was pretty well-timed. But I just thought he went a bit rogue at times. He seemed to be popping up as a sort of 10 in front of Modric and Kroos. And Modric and Kroos suddenly just looked about 70 combined.
Yeah.
Well, they are pretty much. And yeah, they looked every bit of their years. And I thought Kyle Walker just completely shut down that right-hand side. It was his best performance of the season by a distance. All that talk about him possibly being done at the top level. And there's also been question marks around Gabi Jesus. I mean, whether he can ever replace Aguero's output, and while he might not ever be the goal scorer of Aguero levels, in terms of an all-round player, he's much more complete, I would argue, and perfect for that job that Pep asked him to do, playing wide left in the first half with Foden playing as a false nine, and then he just went back to a traditional 4-3-3 in the second half with Jesus playing centrally, and I thought he was magnificent. And bar a sort of 10-minute spell in the first half where Benzema had a good effort, they scored a goal as well after poor marking from Rodri and Fernandinho. Well, the whole City defence just let Benzema have a run on them, really. And Jao Cancelo beaten far too easily by Rodrigo for the cross. Bar that little 10-minute spell, City were extremely comfortable. And I'm with Joe, it could have been much, much more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would offer a little bit of a defense of a couple of players. Like, I do think, yeah, Benzema deserves credit. Benzema,
he was great. Benzema was great, yeah. Target,
created a couple of chances. You know, a really good performance from him. And actually, I thought Eder Militao was probably the best of the back line.
He was the only one who didn't get dispossessed
at some point. Made 6 tackles and interceptions, blocked 5 shots. But I was actually looking at this and I thought this was really interesting. Both sides were dispossessed 7 times, right? Had players just taken off the ball 7 times. The 4 players who were dispossessed for City at some stage were De Bruyne and then the front 3 of Sterling, Jesus and Foden. Whereas for Real Madrid, the players who were dispossessed during this match were Varane, Carvajal and Ferland Mendy, which just shows that they were losing it in such dangerous zones again and again and again. And as Joe said, Eden Hazard.
This
was a game where people were saying, you know, Eden Hazard back on English soil. You know, he's obviously dominated this league. This is an opportunity for him to restore his reputation. Didn't work out that way, did it, Joe?
Well, no, that's an understatement. I mean, he didn't look fully fit, in my opinion. I don't know whether he's got injury problems, what's going on with him at the moment, but didn't look fully fit. But let's not forget, this is... How old is Eden Hazard now? 28?
29, yeah, I think. So.
29, maybe. And this is a man who's never performed in the Champions League. We're talking about one of Europe's most elite wingers. Never performed in the Champions League, is he?
He doesn't have a great record.
Terrible record. An absolutely terrible record. He can't have scored more than 10 goals in the Champions League in history.
Yeah, I think Erling Haaland's already passed him, I think.
So, I mean, he's obviously not fit, and he's obviously had a terrible first season in Madrid. But in his defence, I thought, like you said, Kyle Walker was fantastic. And I actually thought as well that João Cancelo played really well in this game. Looked way more aggressive. In fairness to him, he was up against Carvajal, who looks like a League One defender, to be honest with you. And I just couldn't believe how bad Madrid were, to be frank. Hazard, what did he put up? No chances created, I don't think. Two chances created, one shot, no completed dribbles was the statistics for Hazard. Just unbelievable, given that I watched him tear Man City apart under Conte 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, I thought, on the other hand, Ilkay Gundogan, I thought, had a fantastic game. Like, watching the whole game, it was one of those things, you know, where sometimes you just build that feeling over a while where you're like, is Gundogan having an amazing performance here? And then I was watching him for the rest of the game and I don't think I saw him really put a foot wrong. Completed a couple of dribbles, created 4 chances, which was the second best on the pitch behind De Bruyne, who created 9 chances.
Wow.
And he won possession 3 times as well. Just when you were in that central area, when things were congested and when Real Madrid were trying to step things up, Gundogan's ability to evade pressure on the ball just meant that they could not get a handle on them at any point. I mean, look at this. 40% of Real Madrid's touches in this game came in their own defensive third. 17% of City's came in their defensive third. City ended up with 20 shots to Real's 9. I mean, like, to be fair to this Real Madrid side, when you look at them, I do think that there's a lack of superstar talent. Like, yes, there's Eden Hazard there, but when you look around the rest of that team, you do see a lot of guys who were superstars, but are not really anymore. I mean, is it? I know at the beginning you were saying that you kind of didn't really understand their tactics, but is this not to some degree just a matter of talent as well?
Go on, dudes, you go. I'm ranting.
Sorry, yeah, I didn't know whether that was aimed at Joe or me, but yeah.
It was aimed at both, really.
I think to say that they don't have the talent is maybe a little bit narrow-minded, in that some of their young, particularly on their wing talent, like Rodrigo, Vinicius Jr., Asensio, these are some of the best wingers coming through in world football. And he did have opportunities to change it earlier and differently, Zidane. Like, I thought the chance was to take off Hazard. He was having, by all accounts, a very average game. Rodrigo was shining on the other side, and Zidane went to take off the younger guy rather than the bigger name. It just felt like Zidane completely got that wrong. And then in terms of their backline, yeah, they didn't really have any other options. And you can't really legislate for Varane, who has had an excellent season by all accounts, just dropping the worst game of his career at that point. And although they got completely dominated, and City, I think, would have found a way to win either way, they were 2 really uncharacteristic errors. And actually, I think for the first one, Courtois didn't really help him out either.
Shocking, because
Gabriel Jesus was already on him, poor touch, and then he just gets tackled. Easy cutback to Sterling for the opener. So I didn't think Courtois really covered himself in glory with his feet in particular. He made some sharp saves at points. But yeah, just really disappointing for Zidane and Real Madrid. But they are in the sort of middle of a transitional phase. I think they're, over the next few years, you'll see Ramos, Cruz, Modric go. And whilst they probably have enough to win La Liga, considering the state that Barcelona are in at the moment, I can't see them challenging for the Champions League anytime soon, really.
No, me neither. Well, before we move on, and we are going to talk about the quarterfinal matchups later, does this change your perception of Man City at all? Does this move them up to favourites, or are they still behind Bayern Munich? How do you feel about them going into the next round of fixtures, Joe?
Well, look, before the weekend's games, I did sort of like a bracket on We Need to Talk, and I had Man City going through against Madrid, but then I also had Juventus to go through against Lyon, so I think they've got a decent tie at the quarterfinal stage. The issue is they're on the same side of the draw as Bayern. And I just think this Bayern team are just the best team in Europe. Hopefully Pep has some sort of tactical plan to counteract Lewandowski and Gnabry and Thiago just running riot. But I just think they're on the wrong side of the draw. And Man City are going to be a problem, though. That game, Man City-Bayern, is going to be an absolute epic.
Yeah, it's a real shame that's not the final. I mean, massive credit to Pep. You talk about whether he'll have a plan for Bayern there. I wanted to see him play similar sort of tactics to that he did in this game. I thought Foden as a false nine worked really well. Ran his socks off. I think he ran 2 kilometres further than anyone else in his 60-odd minutes on the pitch. He kept four attackers really high, pressed their defence into absolute smithereens, and really blew them apart and set the stage for a comprehensive victory.
Though,
so if Pep goes for it, I think they could have a chance, but I think it will be Bayern.
I think that where he's going to have to switch it up in that, I know we're going to come on to these games in a bit, but is that it's a different prospect dealing with Thiago in that defensive midfield position to Casemiro. It's a totally different caliber of distributor on the ball. What Thiago does beautifully, and he did so against Chelsea as well, dropping in between the centre-backs and then just being able to pick balls through the lines at will. And Casemiro, not at one stage against Man City did I ever think he's going to pass into dangerous areas. It was always, I've got to give the ball to Cruz and Modric, or I'm giving it away. Look, Casemiro obviously had a stinker, and I'm trying not to be too disrespectful, but yeah, Thiago, just a different calibre of player, I think.
Well, I certainly hope we see that matchup, because of course it isn't done and dusted yet. It's not guaranteed, especially with one-leg fixtures this season. It does mean the team could kind of get lucky. But before we move on to some of our other Champions League matches from this particular round, a word from our sponsors. Support for Extra Time this week is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. That means exactly what you think it means. They offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Yes, they've just launched in the UK. And obviously, there aren't really specialist tools on the market for this particular kind of male grooming. So you could be one of the very first men in England, or women, I suppose you could buy it, to experience their life-changing products. Now, of the two of you, I feel like if one of you has done yourself a below-the-waist injury in the course of trimming, I think most people would say Joe, but I actually think it's more likely to be Doogie.
Doogie's got to get through a forest, so it'll be Doogie, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, as you all know, very, very hairy bloke. So I have had my fair, you know, run-ins with razors and trimmers and that sort of thing. I remember when I was sort of, you know, developing, let's say, and learning the ropes on this sort of front, I did a shaving foam and wet razor job.
I've done that.
I must have only been about 16, 17, and yeah, there was blood, there was there was ingrown hairs coming through after that. I was in bits. And my bits were in bits, crucially. So I'm going to be looking into Manscaped for sure.
Oh my God. Oh no, this is so visual. I hate it. Well, anyway, to avoid these sorts of problems in the future, Manscaped have redesigned the electric trimmer. So they've got the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0 on the market now in the UK. And it features a cutting-edge ceramic blade. Yeah, I know, right? So that you're not going to have those issues with ingrowing hairs or with razor burn. The battery will last 90 minutes, which I think is like quite optimistic. I mean, in Doogie's case, there's a lot to get through.
Yeah, I'll be charging halfway, I reckon.
Perfect amount of time for this podcast, though.
This feels like a brag though to say it takes me 90 minutes to trim my jacket. But also as well, it's waterproof, so you can trim in the shower, which is actually really good as well. And there's an LED light on it, so so it illuminates the area, so you can be more precise, which I think is really sensible as well. They've also got something which I find really funny, which is the speed of the motor. They've got a 7,000 RPM motor on it, which they call quiet stroke technology, which just made me laugh quite a lot. It comes with a charging dock too. And if you go to manscaped.com and use the code EXTRA, then you can get 20% off and free shipping, which is a really good deal, I think. 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com using the code EXTRA. And you're going to love this slogan, guys. Make your testies their besties.
Love it.
Good.
That's brilliant.
Especially you, Doogie, because I'm genuinely quite worried about about the state.
I mean, they haven't been at their best for a while. I wouldn't worry about it.
Poor old Grace.
Especially in this heat, eh?
Oh, exactly.
All right, so shall we move on then to, a different sort of disaster this week, which is Juve's exit to Lyon in the Champions League and the subsequent sacking of Maurizio Sarri. The shock of the round, I would say, this was. Juve won 2-1 at home over Lyon, but it was not enough to see them through, having lost 1-0 in France. They went further behind on aggregate after 12 minutes when Memphis Depay converted a penalty, when Bernardeschi was judged to have clipped Aouar.
Never a foul, by the way. Never in a million years a foul.
That is what it's been given for, right, though, that Bernardeschi clipped him from behind, because Bentancur then makes an incredibly clean challenge, right?
Well, I mean, I didn't see the Bernardeschi clip, but the tackle by Bentancur is just sensational.
I know, it's amazing.
It cannot be given as a foul.
But at the same time, I mean, the one thing that kind of prevents you feeling sorry for Juventus here is that they got the ultimate bullshit penalty later on. Like, that was it a Pjanic free kick? And Memphis Depay just has arms. Like, his arms are here against his body. He's moved them out of the way, and it's just...
Well, it was just so frustrating, because the whole thing is outside the natural silhouette of your body. And they were nowhere near the outside natural silhouette of his body. They were just literally attached to his torso. It felt really harsh, and it felt like the referee had sort of evened things up. I'm not accusing him of that, but it felt like it because he'd got one wrong in the first half and probably knew that, you know, he probably had an absolute rollicking from Sarri as he went down the tunnel and made a decision to sort of even it up. It felt like it. I'm not saying he did it, but it was outrageous.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit like a throwback Juventus game, like them getting a penalty out of nothing and then 6 minutes of extra time at the end of the game. I thought, oh, this is familiar, yeah. Juventus getting this at their home ground. But anyway, Ronaldo obviously scored the penalty and then scored a fantastic goal on the hour to make things interesting, but they just couldn't do enough. And Joe, I know that you've been extremely unimpressed by Maurizio Sarri this season at Juventus.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think he was the right appointment in the first place. I didn't really think he was the right appointment at Chelsea, to be totally honest. But nevertheless, you know, won a Europa League there, finished third. Lack of rating I have for Sarri is that he finished third, won Europa League, and the fans still hated him. And then he went to Juve, won the league, got to the cup final, and the fans still hated him. Like, his football is so dry, it's so dull. And I don't want to put it all at his door, because, quite frankly, Paratici has sort of built an ageing squad, hasn't he, that looks a little bit muddled, really, a little bit fatty. And I just don't think Sarri was ever the right man for the role. I don't think he was the right man in the first place. They should have gone for Pochettino, and I think they did go for Pochettino, but couldn't get him. And the point of Pirlo just feels like an absolute stab in the dark. I mean, he doesn't even have his coaching badges. He can't manage them in Europe next season because he doesn't have the qualifications to manage a European competition.
I think in his defence, he's meant to sit his exam for his European coaching badge in September. So if he gets it, then they'll be all right. He will be able to coach them in the Champions League next year.
But Pochettino is on the market. On the market. It feels like such a weird move. I mean, I would have been more in favour of bringing back Allegri.
Or even waiting and seeing if Conte becomes available. I kind of wondered if they were going to do that at some stage.
It just feels so bizarre, doesn't it? And I'm guessing they've kind of looked at Zidane and thought, yeah, this is the kind of path you want to follow with Real Madrid's success. But Real Madrid, at that time, felt like a club that was chock full of superstars and just kind of needed a man manager to come in and soothe a few egos and play them in their right positions and go, go on, boys, you do your thing. Whereas Juventus, I look at the squad and I think, this needs like serious work. It needs players out the door quickly. It needs the right players to come through. And do I trust Pirlo, who's had 9 days of coaching with the under-23s and not a single one of those days was on the training ground? No. I cannot believe that Agnelli's gone down the route of Pirlo here. I think it's such a risk, although I do think it was the right decision to sack Sarri because I think he's nowhere near the level of Juventus.
Do you agree with that, Dukes? Because like, as soon as this happened, I kind of thought, yeah, they're going to strengthen and they've already got like Kulusevski coming in. But I also kind of thought they've got the opportunity to go for 10 titles in a row next season. And this is... it's such a risky time to make this appointment.
Absolutely. It doesn't seemingly make any sense at all. I think it's just such a damning indictment of Sarri that they were prepared to give... he's not really even a coach yet, just a man with experience at Juventus, the job over him. It feels like he'll be in charge for a year and then they'll make a massive move for Pep next summer when his contract runs out at Man City. And maybe they just think, we'll probably win the league based on the talent we have. But I'm kind of with Joe. I think too many average players have played too many games at Juventus this year. Obviously, they were quite unlucky with Chiellini getting injured. They're actually pretty strong at centre-back. I think they've got great options there, although Daniele Rugani shouldn't be anywhere near a top side. But Danilo playing too many games. Juan Cuadrado as a right-back has probably, you know, slightly been found out at stages. Their midfield composition hasn't worked at all. Throughout the year, there doesn't seem like there's much of a plan there. Pjanic has not had a good campaign by his own pretty high standards. Higuain has played far too many games. Dybala not starting on Friday night seemed very weird. Whereas
he's been injured, to be fair.
I take that back. But, problems. You know, Bernardeschi wants out, supposedly. He's willing to be sold and yet has to start this massive, massive game. And it seemed like... now, I was watching the City-Real Madrid game, so I didn't really see it firsthand, but it seemed like only Ronaldo was really bringing his A game, and it was all pretty reliant on him. And I saw Karen Carney, and I can't remember, maybe it was Owen Hargreaves in the studio afterwards, saying that all the midfielders were so determined to stay in their Sarri-designed positions that there weren't any forward runs, there wasn't any off-the-ball movement, it was just so stale and methodical. And yes, they beat Lyon, but it was a Lyon side, you know, with a pretty weak defence, and a midfield... although he played very well, but Kakare had never really played before.
Bruno Guimaraes was
awesome, and he just ran the show. Houssam Aouar had a phenomenal game as well. But they were playing Carl Toko Ekambi and Memphis Depay up front, who's been out with an ACL injury. So it wasn't exactly the hardest opposition, and they couldn't get the job down. So pretty damning, but I'm intrigued to see what sort of Pirlo brings to the party. But good news for Jorginho and Chelsea. Well, good news for Chelsea fans. It probably means that Jorginho is going to stay, although that is up to debate whether that is good news for them.
I don't reckon that's good news for Chelsea fans. Chelsea fans want Jorginho out and Declan Rice in, I think.
Yeah,
that's what you'd ask most Chelsea
potentially
fans.
But yeah, now that I'm looking at mini Pirlo, Sandro Tonali.
But you know, like this Juventus squad, like at the start of the summer, people were talking about, they don't need any more forwards, they don't need certain players, they're bringing the wrong type of player in. I could not believe it. Who's the young lad they brought on against Lyon? Is it like Oliveri, something like that? Unbelievable. He looked about 22 stone, Oliveri, when he came on the field. He's like 17, 8. I'm guessing he's like 20 years old. I don't know anything about him. But Dybala had to come off.
Because I watched the final few minutes and I was like, who the hell is that? Because I'd never heard of him. And I was expecting him to be like 36 and just on for one final swan song.
He's probably
looks
like 20,
about 36. He's about 20, yeah.
Yeah, I just did not get the squad makeup at all coming into the season. I think it's proved to be the case that it's all over the gaff, packed full of either old, like solid players or like 24-year-olds that just aren't cutting it at the very top level. Matthijs de Ligt has had to play the entire season with a terrible shoulder injury, by all accounts, that is now going to see him sidelined till Christmas because he's got to undergo surgery. It just feels like a mess. All over the place is a mess.
Yeah, completely agree. And it could get even worse if, as rumoured, Cristiano Ronaldo is to leave. Dukes, what do you think of the links between Ronaldo and PSG?
I think it's just paper fodder, to be honest. I doubt he will leave. I think it would be pretty big admission of defeat if Juve did agree to sell him just 2 years after joining. He obviously hasn't completed the job that he wanted to do there and bringing them back the Champions League. And the way he's performed this year, he looks like he's got at least another 3 years to do that. So I don't think Juve will let him leave. I think it's just, yeah, just a good way of filling papers, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I still can't get over the Pirlo thing. It's so insane because it has been compared with other managers hiring like ex players as coaches. But you think about, you know, Zidane coached the youth team. So did Guardiola at Barcelona. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was a full-fledged manager in Norway before he went to Man United. Lampard had coached in the Championship, and Arteta had at least served like quite a long term as an assistant coach to Pep Guardiola. Pirlo's just like straight off the vineyard.
It's crazy.
I kind of hope that it completely backfires on them, but who knows? They'll probably just win the title again.
Do you think though? It's a little bit of a damning indictment of Poch. I think, like, there's been a lot of clubs that have swapped out manager whilst he's been available, and nobody's gone for him. And
this is the first one, right, though, where they wouldn't have had to pay compensation.
Yeah.
In all the others, like, you can understand that they were like, we're going to have to pay him to make up for the money he's not going to get from Spurs.
Yeah, but I just think he's a good enough manager to warrant that £10 million payout or whatever it was. Like,
yeah, agreed.
Obviously, he started to backtrack a little on the Barcelona rumours, hasn't he? And I feel like when Quique Setién went there, it was like, really, is he better coach than Poch? Like, can we not just pay up what we need to get him in? And I just think that if you're Poch and that job was available and you weren't even sort of brought into the fold and questioned over the role, because it felt like they sacked him on, what was it, Sunday, and they appointed Pirlo on the same day, effectively, didn't they? And I would be really, like, Pochettino, I'd be starting to think, where the fuck am I going to go? Because he's been out of management for nearly a year now.
And now he's being linked with Roma if Fonseca leaves. I don't know, it just feels like his best hope is that PSG do not win the Champions League, Tuchel leaves, and then he can go there to a club where he was the captain and, you know, played for them for some years.
Or when Barcelona get knocked out, they sack Setién and then he just has to backtrack on all of his statements and they go for him.
Yeah, and he'd be absolutely fantastic there. But should we do a quick blast through the other fixtures? Now you've brought up Barcelona while we're here. Barcelona obviously knocked out Napoli, 3-1 home win following that 1-1 away draw before lockdown. But Napoli looked very dangerous, didn't they, Dukes?
Yeah, they did. They had some big moments. Milik obviously had a goal ruled out for offside as well. They looked pretty dangerous. And there was a slightly fortuitous penalty, I would say, where Messi sort of tackles Koulibaly from behind, and Koulibaly accidentally
nailed,
like,
on
swipes
pen,
his...
though, Dukes. It's
yeah,
a
no, it's
on
a pen, but it's pretty unfortunate, really. Koulibaly's just trying to clear the ball and Messi sticks his leg in the way. It's definitely a penalty. I saw some people trying to claim it wasn't. No, it definitely was. But it's job done for Barcelona. It would have been pretty embarrassing to lose to Napoli at home when they finished, what, seventh in Serie A? And with a squad that needs a massive, massive rebuild. Talk about Juve needing changing. I mean, Napoli, there's potentially three or four players leaving there this summer. Who all need replacing, although they've got off to a good start with Osimhen coming in. But yeah, job done for Barcelona. Messi, again, crucial, scoring an incredible goal when pretty much, you know, horizontal to the ground. So massive credit to him. And it's what we've talked about, that Barcelona, you know, in one-off games will be dangerous. And I don't think it'll be simple for Bayern when they play them in the quarterfinals by any stretch.
Joe, talking of Bayern, Robert Lewandowski with another star turn against Chelsea.
Yeah, I mean, just really a step too far for this sort of young Chelsea team. And obviously, they're ravaged by injury as well. But yeah, I was lucky enough to go to the first leg of this at Stamford Bridge. And Bayern, I've said it on a few shows now, just the best team I've seen all season by an absolute mile. Just ripped Chelsea apart. That could have been 5 or 6-0 there. And to be honest with you, it could have been 5-1, whatever the... I think it finished 4, didn't it? 4-1. I was so pissed 4-1. When I was watching this game, to be honest with you. I can't really remember it. But... yeah, Bayern are just in a total league of their own against a team like Chelsea. And to be honest with you, I think they'll absolutely batter Barcelona. Barcelona's defence looks so mediocre. And this Bayern forward unit is just sensational under Hansi Flick. If Hansi Flick wins a treble in his first season in club management, he's got to go down as just like a genius, isn't he? That's outrageous. Because they were playing average football pre-Hansi Flick, and now they've won 18 games on the spin. and scoring goals for fun. Lewandowski looks like an absolute tyrant up front, and Gnabry looks just as good. So yeah, I think Bayern are the team to beat in the tournament, and that they'll thump Barcelona when they play each other at the quarters.
Well, we'll come on to a little preview of the quarterfinals in a minute. I'm sorry if I feel like I can hear somebody using the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 in the background.
Yeah, sorry, we're having it. We've got a plumber around. Our toilet is broken.
Understand.
And he has been quiet thus far, but yeah, he's just made an appearance. So if you could hear that, apologies about that.
Well, you're forgiven, but I still think that it was probably a trimming going on. But we've actually got another sponsor for you this week, Beer 52, our old friends. Obviously, we're now coming to the end of the summer, I suppose. Like, it feels like the heat is just kind of getting started. But it's a really good time to get in some really nice beers. And obviously, Beer 52 have the perfect beer for any occasion. If you go to beer52.com/extra, then you can get a crate of 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet for free. All you do is cover £5.95 for the postage. Now, we talked about Beer 52 before. They're a craft beer discovery club. They have 150,000 members, and they send a brand new case to each one of those members each month. Those cases are normally themed. So often they'll be, say, New Zealand themed, South Africa, Korea, you know, like different countries, different styles of beer that you can try. They're also really passionate about the UK craft beer scene, which means that this is a great way to offer support to local breweries during this this time of financial crisis. And of course, if you don't like dark beer, there's actually an option on the website if you subscribe to only ask for light beers, and you will only get those kind of lighter ones, which I think are a little bit better for this time of year, in my opinion. You'll also get a copy of award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack. You can, of course, pause or cancel your account at any time. So, to make the most of that deal, go to beer52.com/extra. That's beer52.com/extra to get your first case of 8 beers for £5.95. So, let's move on to the quarterfinal fixtures. And I've got to say, I'm really excited. I know that it's not... Everyone keeps saying, oh, well, obviously it's not the ideal situation for football right now, but I'm probably going to watch a quarterfinal every day this week. It's going to be tremendous. So the fixtures are the first game, Atalanta-PSG, then RB Leipzig-Atletico Madrid. Then we've got what I would say is the big one, Bayern Munich versus Barcelona, and then Man City-Lyon on Saturday. Joe, do you agree with me? Is Barcelona-Bayern Munich the fixture of the round?
Yeah, I think for the neutral, certainly. It looks like the sort of two biggest clubs facing off, but I do think Bayern are just going to blitz Barca there. For me, I actually think the tie of the round is probably Atalanta versus Paris. I just watched some Atalanta highlights before this, actually, and you know, Gasperini's just got on playing such sensational football, and it's such a shame Ilicic isn't going to be available. I'm just so disappointed that that's not going to happen, and it probably will end up costing them in the long run. But I think they've got enough to beat PSG. I really do. This PSG team is ravaged by injuries as well. We're not going to see Di Maria. We're not going to see Icardi. We're not going to see Mbappe. We're not going to see Verratti. We're not going to see Carrère. I think this could be a shock result in the quarters. I've got Atalanta to beat PSG here.
Whoa. Oh, that's what I like to hear. Doogie, do you agree with that? Because you love a left field shout in a prediction.
I do like a left field shout. And actually, when the ties got announced, I put on Twitter, like, beware that fixture. It certainly won't be a formality. And as Joe says, with those injuries and suspensions, absolutely crucial. We saw...
Mate, the pressure on Neymar. The pressure on Neymar to
absolutely
finally step
massive.
Up for PSG.
Absolutely massive. And has played well in the competition so far. Has had another phenomenal season when he's been available to play Neymar. But, you know, that sort of justification of that monster move from 2017, he needs to start producing in the latter stages of a knockout competition. And you know, with... just one, you know, three games away from glory now. It really is the opportunity for him to step up. I also think Leipzig-Atleti is going to be pretty interesting. Two sort of diametrically opposed styles. RB Leipzig, massive shame that Timo Werner's already playing with Chelsea, or at least training with Chelsea. And Atleti at the end of the year were starting to look pretty good, actually. They played some of their best football after lockdown, with Marcus Llorente really coming to the fore as a sort of reimagined attacking ride. Right midfielder or number 10. So I'm intrigued to see that tie as well. But yeah, what an absolute feast of football. And we've got Europa League, of course, on Monday, Tuesday as well, as in tonight and tomorrow. So yeah, all the football all the time at the moment. That's good.
Bringing back football feast there, dude.
Exactly.
I mean, My issue is that, yeah, I keep getting excited about Leipzig Athletic, and then I remember Werner's not playing. Yeah. And also there's the concern about who might be ruled out as a result of these positive coronavirus tests at Atletico Madrid. We're not entirely sure what's going on there, I don't think. I agree, I think that Bayern will probably batter Barcelona, but it's one game. And it's entirely possible that Messi just completely takes charge of it and blitzes through them. Do you think there's any scope for a Barcelona victory there, Dukes? Because Joe obviously doesn't.
There obviously is. Where there's Messi, there's a way. But I'd put it at max 20-25% likelihood. Like Bayern have just been absolutely phenomenal. I think they took 49 points out of their a final 51 available in the league. They obviously destroyed Leverkusen in the DFB Pokal final, scored another 4 goals against Chelsea. Like, that attacking unit is just so fluid. I actually thought Chelsea gave them far too much respect and time at times on Saturday night. But it's going to be a massive, massive ask. And Barcelona haven't looked, you know, like they can put 3 good performances together all season in a row. So they look very unlikely to win this competition and really get through against Bayern.
All right, well, it's prediction time then. Joe, give me your predictions for each fixture and then your favourite for the tournament.
All right, so when I did the bracket on We Need to Talk, I had Atalanta to beat PSG. I think that's going to be a really tight one, though, just because of that Ilicic. I think it's like his wife's cheated on him or something like that, so he's not come back to Italy.
That is the rumour.
That is the rumour, isn't it? I do think they'll get the job done, though. I'm putting my nuts on the line saying Atalanta. Bayern, Barca, I will go, obviously, Bayern, I think, probably 4-1, something like that there. Messi will score, but I just think Bayern will be way too strong. Leipzig, Atletico, that's going to be a disgusting Simeone performance. Borefest, sit back, extra time or something like that, and then a 1-0 scrub goal from Koke or something like that. Just horrible football. And then Man City-Lyon's quite a tight one. Because I watched Lyon Man City, was it in 2018 when they're in the same groups? And I think Lyon beat them once and drew with them.
The 3-3 draw.
I think Pep said as much, didn't he? He said that they're one of the best teams he's played, actually. So that could be quite interesting, that Man City-Lyon one. I do think Pep will have enough, but it could be quite tight. So I'll go Man City 2-0 there. So my teams to go through are Atalanta. I'll go 3-1 against PSG. Bayern 4-1. Ooh. Atletico 1-0 Leipzig, and then Man City 2-0 Lyon.
Oh my God, and still Bayern favourites for you?
100% Bayern Munich favourites. It needs a Messi miracle. It needs a Messi, like you said, if Messi just shows up and just does a madness and scores a hat-trick, then fair play to Leo. But the let's have it right, Napoli could easily have won the game at the Nou Camp.
Yes, they could have.
And Bayern are a much better team than Napoli, so yeah, I back the boys.
What about you, Diggs? Anywhere you disagree?
I think RB Leipzig at Leti. I actually might think RB Leipzig could win that, I think. And I think, yeah, Atalanta could well beat PSG. But other than that, I think Bayern Munich are going to, you know, comfortably beat Barcelona. I think Man City Lyon will end up being about 3-1 as well. But yeah, 2 potential shocks in there with Atalanta and RB Leipzig going through, I reckon.
Go on there, Diggs. What's your actual prediction for Atalanta-Paris? Put the old nuts on the line. Manscaped.
I will say my Manscaped nuts on the line. I'm going to say, I think it might be a bit of a thriller, but I'm going to go low scoring thriller. I think it might be 2-1 Atalanta. I really do think they can cause PSG some damage. They've only played 2 games in, you know, since March, PSG. And that will be a big factor in Man City Lyon as well, because Lyon obviously won't have got that rhythm going. They'd have only played that one game on Saturday other than the Coupe de France final, the Coupe de la Ligue final. I can't remember which one it was. So their, you know, freshness, they'll be fresher than Man City in many ways, but also much more unpracticed. So I can only see Man City winning that as well.
Yeah, I think the Man City and Bayern to go through, I think those are pretty easy calls. Atalanta, PSG, I don't know, man. Because I love Atalanta, but I still recall them, you know, they did get slapped about by Man City in the group stages. But then with Verratti missing, that is such a big miss for PSG. You know, even if they just had Verratti and still didn't have, you know, Mbappe and Icardi and stuff, I would think, yeah, they can get this done. Whereas,
who will play in their midfield? Who will it be? Will it be
Herrera, Gay and Paredes, maybe?
Yeah, or it could even be Marquinhos in there. I mean, they've got guys like Sarabia and Draxler as well, who kind of come inside a lot. Like, Draxler's been fielded as a central midfielder at points. But that's a rough... Okay, I'll go Atalanta as well for that, but I think it'll be I think it'll be tighter. Yeah, I agree. Kind of 2-1 Atalanta. Leipzig Atleti, I think the smart money is on Atleti, but I am going to go Leipzig. I just think it'll be attack versus defence for most of the game.
Can you imagine Atalanta-Leipzig semi-final? What is happening?
That would be wild. It'd be amazing. I mean, well, they're not going to win it anyway. But yeah, I don't know. I just think that Leipzig, if it is attack versus defence, you are asking for trouble against an Nagelsmann team. Like, you really are. And Atleti, I don't think have been that impressive this season. Who else have we got? Oh, the other ones are just easy. So, yeah, I think it's probably... you know what? I'm actually going to say Man City are going to win the tournament.
You think they beat Bayern?
I think they can beat Bayern. Like, I'm not going to say that... Yeah, well, I guess I am saying they will. But, yeah, I think that Man City are really, really good. And they've got so much depth. And I trust their depth a little bit more than Bayern's. You know, like, Bayern are still... Still giving a lot of minutes to Perisic. You know, they still don't seem to really trust Coutinho. If Pavard's back, then maybe that changes things. But when they have to play Kimmich at right back, I really do think that makes their midfield substantially worse, no matter how good Thiago is. So, yeah, why not? I'm gonna say Man City to win it. There you go.
Jeez.
So, before we go, I was going to do anything but football, but... I just kind of wanted to know if anyone had tips for staying cool in the heat, because I feel like I'm going to die. And, you know, Dougs, you're from Scotland. Joe, you're ginger. So I feel like you two should be taking precautions right now in the heat.
Absolutely. Slap on that sun cream, guys. There's no shame in it. Stay safe in the sun. Wear one of those hats that the cricketers wear that folds over the back as well. Used to have one of those. Need to get one of those back.
Sensational.
And then get a mega fan. My friends have just moved abroad and they've given me this absolute hog of a fan. It's about 4 foot tall. It's huge. So get one of those and just get stuck in.
Joe, yeah. Do you have anything?
I mean, stay in the shade. That's what I generally do. stay in the shade. But yeah, same as Doogie. Just try not to wear dark colours. Wear light colours. And then just have ice cubes on you at all times.
I've also used a cold water bottle last night. Like,
where have you been putting that, Pat?
Oh, everywhere. Between the thighs is the optimal zone for
That's where you like, need to. That's where you need to direct the fan. I always find.
Well, yeah, but I, you know, the fan needs to cover both of us, so I can't just direct the fan on me all the time. But we've got a big old fan in here. We got one of the Dyson ones, and then
I knew you'd have a Dyson, Pat.
It's because I'm too hot all the time. And actually, I'm really glad that I lost weight between last summer and this summer, because like now I occasionally get cold. Whereas a year and a half ago, I was always fucking hot. So I feel like the world's gone down about 5 degrees now that I've lost some weight. And I just think if I weighed as much this summer as I did last summer, I'd have f***ing melted by now. So thanks very much for joining me on the show today, guys. Is there anything that you'd like to plug? Joe?
Go and watch that We Need to Talk bracket for the Champions League. Obviously, I've already got one result wrong, so Man City are going to get to that semi-final stage. But nevertheless, yeah, go and watch that, because I got 3 out of 4 right. Not too bad.
Not too bad. Dukes?
Nice. Yeah, go over to Eurofootball Daily. We dropped a scout report that Pat wrote about Dortmund and how they produce the best talent in world football. It was very well written and a great edit from George. So go and show that some love. It dropped on Monday.
Thank you very much, guys. Oh, actually, before I forget... I need to find this video. Hopefully Mike Atkins will have found it. But if you want to learn more about Maxence Kakaré, who had that great game against Juventus, I did write about him in a video on like the top 10 under the radar prospects or something. Nice. Don't know why I'm talking about this. Don't remember the title. But we have featured him on the channel. So there's one of the very few examples of Football Daily getting it right compared to the many, many examples of us getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for joining me, guys, and thank you to you for watching or listening. We'll see you all next time. Make sure that you subscribe to the channel if you're not already, or subscribe to the podcast if you haven't. Thanks very much. Bye.
Bye.